Good morning, congregation. This is Pastor Jeffs. President Trump has once again started pumping Bitcoin. Because the Lord has ordained it, we are going to the moon. Last week, Speaker Mike Johnson went to Israel to inspect the red heifers that will be sacrificed in order to ordain the building of the third temple and usher in the end times. Before the Antichrist is conjured, though, the Lord wants to make us all rich. All of this is because of His Son, Jesus Christ, who came to earth to die on a cross so that the Gentiles can also go to heaven. You have a choice before you. Do you want to experience the rapture with heavy crypto bags, or do you want to go to heaven having fun staying poor? The Lord commands us to be good stewards of the gifts He gives us. Will you choose to be a good steward? We are in a bull market, and it's all thanks to Jesus. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for blessing our cryptocurrency holdings because we put our faith in you. Thank you for bringing us such a good Christian leader in President Trump. But most of all, Lord, thank you for hard forking so that us Gentiles can get into heaven now too. In the name of prosperity, amen. Now folks, Richard Griessa has created a groundbreaking documentary series investigating whether or not Jesus was a Mossad agent, which can be accessed behind a paywall on Fountain. You can access this content and much more to come by subscribing to the Bugle Weekly for 10 USDT in Bitcoin a month. Later on in the show, there will be a trailer for this groundbreaking investigation that I'm featured in. But before we get into it, let's worship the Lord, for He is good.
Welcome back to the Bugle Weekly, folks. This is Richard Griessa. Joining me today, as usual, is Rod Palmer. And I got to say, folks, it feels so good to be back. You know, this last couple weeks, This is the first time we missed a week with the Bugle Weekly, and I can't tell you how much emotional pain it is. I imagine it's similar to what being like a crack addict feels, you know, when they're in between hits and they can't score. You know, maybe they spent all their money on crack, now they're broke, and they're trying to find a dealer that's willing to let them suck a dick. Like, that is kind of the feeling I had. Was I need to get back to Bitcoin podcasting. And so we're back, folks. We're back this week. What's going on, Rod?
Yeah, a lot of us can relate to this. You get to come towards the end of summer, and if you're a big fan of sports ball, you know, all you got left is baseball. Baseball is the most boring sport. You got golf. Like, there's no football, there's no hockey, there's no basketball. A lot of your favorite shows on TV, like, for years, the summertime would be when you're in between season. There's no new content. There's no new good, exciting content. People are on vacation. Bitcoin podcasters have been, you know, at Paper Bitcoin Summer. They've been at Lake Satoshi. They've been at the conferences. They've been in Washington, D.C., mingling with politicians and going to Diddy parties. It's been a, you know, they're building a community. And so around the same time, you hit your RSS feed, you open up your phone, you go to listen to Bitcoin podcasts, you're trying to get your 40 hours per week, and there's just not as many new episodes. There's not as much new content. There's not as much new breakdowns and analysis of, you know, what Bitcoin did in the past few weeks. It's a lull in the summertime. But if you have been keeping up and participating in Paper Bitcoin Summer, you haven't missed anything. You have been a part of the action. You've been a part of meaning this new paradigm of securitized Bitcoin equity products and Bitcoin yield, MSTY, covered calls. Like, we have taken the speculation off of the main chain. You can now buy a coffee for less than one sap or V-byte in fees. But what we've built is this compliant layer of thermodynamically sound speculation. And companies are now accumulating Bitcoin. Bitcoin podcasters are bringing the message directly to the mainstream and controlling the narrative. And a lot of people are grumpy about that because they thought that their Bitcoin, not crypto, memes, they thought that those were still fresh. And now Wall Street has taken the kind of the vibe of Bitcoin Twitter and repurposed it and repackaged it and made this like suit coiner paper Bitcoin equity product, or leveraged Bitcoin equities, as Corey at Swan calls them. And they've made them cooler than the guys at Stackchain. They've made them cooler than Pleb Underground. They've made them cooler than, you know, some of the group chats and spaces groups. The most popular memers of the last cycle. And this is the revenge of the podcasters, and not everybody's joining. So you have to get better at memeing because you're getting destroyed by Wall Street.
Yeah, I mean, essentially Vibes Capital has replaced Triple Elite Memes, the Meme Factory, 58K Gang. I mean, there's not really anybody out there anymore that, as far as the meme gangs go, there's I would consider Stackchain a meme gang. Ungovernable,
you got a great magazine, yeah.
Ungovernable Misfits isn't very good at memes. But when you encounter them at Lake Satoshi, you see all the pleb miner shirts. They kind of look like a meme game. They look like,
right.
Yeah, I mean,
well, yeah. Some of the meme gangs sold out. Some of the meme gangs, you know, they retired. Some of the meme gangs, I mean, some of the members, we don't know what happened to them. Some of them got vaccinated and they just, you know, their podcast died suddenly. But the essence of what the vibe of a meme gang, you're right, has evolved. It's now Vibes Capital. It is, you know, Dr. Adam Back basically retired or quit the Moscow meme tards, and now he's launched his own meme gang. It's going public. It's grown so quickly. It's scaled. We have scaled meme gangs.
Yeah. So I just thought of something. I was listening to some podcast that Vlad Costia was on this week, and they were discussing. So Monero dropped in value pretty significantly this week. So there's a conversation that we had with some people at Lake Satoshi. You know, Rev Hoddle, all he wanted to talk about was Monero the whole time. So we talked about Monero with Rev Hoddle. And yeah, Monero's having a bad week. And part of the reason why is because there's essentially a mining attack being happening where some large data centers just like, we're going to mine empty blocks on Monero, make it harder for people to send transactions. And then they were doing some other, you know, fuckery. And I came to the realization that the Monero philosophy around mining is exactly like the BitX.
Right, exactly. They wanted to be, you know, these big mining farm, they wanted to be resistant to that. They wanted everybody, like, you know, they wanted, say you had a building like CIA headquarters, the Pentagon, and all your employees were working remote during COVID, but you had all this compute power in there. It's like you could use all that compute power to mine Monero, and it would be, but you couldn't build these farms. Everybody, you had to have the same amount of compute. And 80 cents, but it makes it easier to attack. Why do you think, that maybe the BitX, like, do they need their own BitX? Would that help it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only way to fix this is tax or rebates. You know what I mean? That's the solution to everything. Is you gotta manipulate the incentives through central planning and in some way, shape, or form. And you have to do it. You have to get the right leaders in power. You know what I mean? Like the ones that are ideologically on your side, you got to get the good guys in office. So it all starts with, you got to go rally at state capitals, and you got to paint the lawn orange, and then you got to, manipulate the laws in favor of your people. And yeah, I mean, that's the solution to it. So there should be tax rebates to mine Monero and to mine with BitX, you know, for ultimate decentralization. And then you should penalize the people that are trying to centralize everything.
Speaking of that, Donald Trump has talked about giving tariff dividends to different, the American citizens, different businesses. So one of the things he talked about is giving these tariff dividends. So, you know, Monero users could benefit from those tax rebates, but it's been criticized. You know, it's just coincidence that you brought up Monero today, because Nick Fuentes just said on his podcast how Monero was the only way to escape the Palantir, Pegasus, CIA, you know, this industrial comp, this deep state industrial complex that's, you know, monitoring everything you do. He said that, you know, if Nick Fuentes says that Monero is the answer, that, you know, it's going to draw a lot more attention to that, and people are going to find out, you know, if this works or it doesn't.
I didn't see that one. That's interesting. Yeah, Nick Fuentes has been blowing up. He's everywhere. He's fighting with Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson. He's going on Sam Hyde's podcast.
Do you think that Nick Fuentes, do you think that his podcast stardom, his rise to this level of platform that he has right now, he just, you know, like you said, podcaster, but Sam Hyde, is in a feud with Tucker Carlson, notably. Do you think that it's a organic rise? Do you think that he's saying something pretty powerful, or do you think that he's a plant? Do you think he's a Fed?
I think it's simpler than either of those things. I think what it is, you know, there's been all this emphasis on like the left wing NPC. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the current thing, or with the current thing. Now there's the right wing NPC, which is that I'm against the current thing, whatever it is. And things have shifted to the right wing really, really quickly. And so many people have formed their identity as being against whatever the current thing is. And so as their things that they were in favor of before are becoming the current things, they're having to find other things to be against. And so Nick Fuentes is doing that for people. Now that Tucker Carlson is considered like the, and Joe Rogan are the establishment media in the sense of like they're the most relevant, widely recognized people driving the conversation. They can't be against that anymore because their identity is being against something else. And it's just, you know, these whims of culture for the 40 hour per week podcast listener, they're just sitting here trying to understand what the hell is going on, because none of it makes any sense, because these are not rational, logical people. They're NPCs. They don't smoke cigarettes. They haven't read Ayn Rand. They're just completely retarded. It's like they're the equivalent of Mike Brock, but you know, they're a little bit more tolerable because they like firearms and country music in NASCAR instead of like trying to turn your children transgender, SEC football. But yeah, it's I mean, he could be a plant.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I really enjoyed about Lake Satoshi was that I didn't really feel like anybody, I didn't feel like I was really hanging out with or smoking cigarettes with anybody who I thought was a Fed, at least not hanging out with me. And I, that's one of the reasons I really appreciated Lake Satoshi. And it was really great to hang out with a lot of you guys. We late stage HODL, one of our best boosters, we confronted him about his claim that we stole anti-Swanotism from him, and he backed down. We sorted that out, so to speak. But he's a great dude. He's really great to me late stage. He thought we would be disappointed. We were actually super stoked. We got to eat some raw milk cheese with Otis Bittmeyer and Fundamentals. And, I feel really bad because the dude gave me, some delicious raw milk, spicy cheese that I was eating with Barn Miner's spicy beef jerky. And I don't know his name, you know, his noster or his online name. So I can't give him credit, but he had awesome cheese. We hung out with Rev HODL. We built social capital, and we smoked rabbit patch weed with really good turpentines. Is that what he said? It smelled like mint. It was awesome. But Carl, yeah, if he wasn't bitching about Monero, we were talking about Alan Stedding, and you know, I want to hear your reflections, Richard, on Lake Satoshi. But after we do that, like, we do have to cover what Rev HODL was talking about with running the Citadel with his wife with walkie-talkies. And before you follow in those footsteps and get your wife a walkie-talkie, you have to make sure she has walkie-talkie offset training for wives. But we'll get into that later, man. What was your experience like at Lake Satoshi?
It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was a good time. I just hung out with the Meshadel folks the majority of the time, talked with Bubba, smoked a lot of cigarettes with him, and smoked a lot of cigarettes with a lot of people, actually. Otis Bittmeyer coffee is really good.
Incredible.
I was impressed. I was impressed with how good it is.
I think, yeah, I was going to say, some people take like Alpha Brain, like Joe Rogan, for podcasting. They think that helps them become better. Screw Alpha Brain. I mean, if you like it, keep it. You got to be drinking Otis Bittmeyer's coffee before you podcast. It is powerful stuff. 100%.
Well, I got to say, my expectations going into it were pretty low. So he brewed the coffee, and this is why. Like, I had high hopes. It was good. Fundamentals said it was good. And then I got there, and he's brewing the coffee, and he starts pouring me a cup. And the first thing he asks is if I want a cream or sugar with it. You know, and typically when somebody offers you cream and sugar, it's a suggestion that the coffee's bad. You know what I mean?
It's like steak sauce for a steak.
Well, I asked him. I looked at him and was like, "Is the coffee that bad?" He's like, "Oh, no. I just figured you were a pussy. And I don't know why he was talking shit to me like that right off the bat. It was kind of fucked up. But, like, yeah, I mean, it was really good. I was impressed with it.
Yeah, yeah. People are not used to their baristas talking shit to them in front of their face. It's usually behind their back.
Well, a lot of people are used to it because you go into most of these coffee shops these days and you've got somebody that looks like, hey, I don't know what these coffee shops are doing. Are they like importing people out of like Portland, Oregon and Seattle? They're just like, we have a barista position open over here in the, you know, the middle of nowhere. Like, you know, you must have like armpit hair and look like you drive a Subaru.
The ideal mountain biking in Seattle in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. Like it's like there's a people like to talk about like the Jews subverting America. It's like, talk about these fucking lesbian baristas. It's like there's a network or a secret society all over the country. It's almost universal. And I think Starbucks is one of the few. You don't see this as much as Starbucks. It's all the hipster coffee shops. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. But continue on your first experience with this coffee.
Yeah, it was really good. I had like 5 cups back to back right there. You can ask Otis. He saw me drink a whole pot of coffee in one sitting. I probably smoked like a half pack of cigarettes while doing it. I mean, it was, seeing Mr. C.D. Brown was fun. There was
a good DJ that was playing the, all the like 1990s, early 2000s techno on the jukebox.
That was Scott Offord.
Yeah. He was, yeah.
And Nick Foster and his family was there.
A lot of Generation X representation at Lake Satoshi.
Yeah, there were definitely some Gen X people. Yeah, there was like a millennial. There wasn't a ton of Zoomers. I guess the kids.
Scott's Luke Broyles was there. Got to meet Luke Broyles. He's got a camping festival going on in New Hampshire here coming up soon. I think Neat Creations is going to that. Larry Lepard, Annalie Brunel, you'd go camping with your favorite podcasters. That's kind of like Lake Satoshi's kind of like the non-compliant version of the New Hampshire camping conference.
There was a lot of people transacting in Bitcoin. That was cool. I enjoyed seeing that.
That was nice. Stackchain Magazine was there.
Stackchain was there, yeah. I bought a Stackchain Magazine. Is my first one I ever got my hands on. I've been trying to get those guys to send me a copy. I got my article published in there a while ago, and I was really, really impressed with the quality of it. It's a very well done magazine. I got the edition with the Asahana Gold cover, and I think it's great that he's working with them. But yeah, I would definitely suggest that people check out Stackchain. It is very well done.
One of my favorite memories from from Lake Satoshi was walking up to like the little value for value market they had going at the front and seeing Fundamentals. Fundamentals was selling copies of his book Bitcoin for Institutions. He was talking to a lot of people who were interested in his book, signing autographs, talking about his podcast. And I got up there and I went up to his table just to say hello. And his daughters were sitting behind the, you know, kind of the table there. They were doing math on work. And I think they were listening to his math podcast. I thought that was like so great. And then Fundamentals told them if they didn't keep focusing on their math and work, that they wouldn't be able to swim in the pool back of the hotel at the end of the day. And I was like, what do you mean hotel Fundamentals? And he's like, yeah, me and my family, my wife would let us go camping because I've been eating too many raw milk cheese and I've got raw milk cheese. And they don't want those farts in the tent, so we gotta stay in the hotel. So we talked about it. He's a little bit ashamed, but you know, little bit of stolen valor for Plunanos there. He didn't actually go camping with us. But for everybody else, you know, we duked it out. We suffered. It's pretty chilly at night. You know, it was not for the weak. He chat, you know, he had a cabin, but somebody clogged his toilet. So it wasn't the greatest experience.
Yeah, I thought it was a great event. I had a lot of fun. But, you know, camping's fun. It's just like everywhere you go is a smoking area, and that's nice. It's nice to be outside. I mean, pretty much everywhere you walk is a Bitcoin podcast. We hung out with so many Bitcoin podcasters. I think that's what was... I'm coming to this realization, pretty much all my friends are Bitcoin podcasters. That's the stage of life I've gone in too.
Yeah, there's something to be said when you encounter somebody and you guys can just get right into the podcast. You don't have to do any intros. You don't have to, you know, ask what their story is. You get right into the podcasting, and before you know it, you know, you're sitting around a fire with a dozen other people, and everybody's just participate. It's almost like Clubhouse. It's like a Bitcoin podcast meets Clubhouse, but it's in real life.
It's like a why are you bullish episode with BTC sessions, but
hell yeah,
much more interesting.
Exactly. It was incredibly bullish. It's incredibly bullish. We're gonna get some behind the podcast interviews from the podcasting we did at Lake Satoshi coming up.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about I had a great time. I mean, I think the stuff that the Meshadel's doing is pretty important. And it was fun to participate in that a bit. I met Solex. Solex was a cool guy. You know, we had a conversation about how I could teach him how to speak American, but I'm not John, so I can't do a Solex impression. He does like a Solex impression almost every episode on Ungovernable Misfits. But yeah, I mean, you know, there wasn't a ton of grumpiness about paper Bitcoin at Lake Satoshi, and it was because everybody was, you know, like trying to actively participate in things. You know what I mean? They were focused. They were, I think a lot of these guys that are grumpy right now, they're grumpy because they just don't have anything better to do. Like they've got too much time in their hands, and that's why they're going on Twitter. Plunder has way too much time on his hands. He's not listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. He's not actually contributing in anything to the economy. He's not on the Meshadel.
He's not providing any value to the value for value community. Plunder is active. He likes to post. He likes to complain, but he doesn't provide any value. And I think when you don't provide any value, you don't really get much in return. And I didn't make it make you grumpy. So I think that if you are not receiving any value from Bitcoin, that's on you, bro, because Bitcoin is providing value to people, to corporations, to politicians, to merchants, to energy, utility. It's providing so much value to people. And if it's not providing value to you and you're grumpy about it, maybe you should ask yourself why.
Yeah. I mean, there's reasons to be grumpy, but when you just make your identity around being grumpy, that's the... Like Coin Icarus could have been in Lake Satoshi, but instead he was being grumpy interviewing Kit Sats about being grumpy about paper Bitcoin.
That's true. Yeah, it's when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And when all you have is the only tool set you have in culture or left is to be grumpy, everything, everybody, every post looks like a good quote tweet to dunk on them or to criticize them or to complain about them. And, you know, it's just, I joked the other day on Twitter, I said, Bitcoin is a tool that individuals can use to accomplish any of their goals and to improve their lives. And Plunder uses Bitcoin as a tool to make sure he never makes any friends. And it's just, you hate to see it.
We saw kind of a glimpse of the future of what these grumpy, bad memeing Bitcoin people are going to look like. Angela McArdle showed up at the event. And if you guys don't know who Angela McArdle is, she was the former chair of the Libertarian Party who recently resigned in the midst of a bunch of controversy. Her big accomplishments included getting Donald Trump to speak at the Libertarian Convention. And I think she's taking credit for freeing Ross. I don't know if the credit's due to her. I don't know who that credit goes to, but on that one, I would give the credit to Lynn's mom, Ross's mom, Lynn. She was the reason why Ross was freed, essentially, not Angela McArdle, but she was sitting there and she's talking about all these things she did, and it was just like, when I see a libertarian and I just see like.
Did you want to see what winning does not look like in the next cycle? Go to like a libertarian meme page from like 2014 and just scroll through that account. That is not what winning looks like. The Libertarian Party is not what winning looks like, especially not in this next few years. So it's like if your mindset, if your perspective is still being shaped by a 2014 libertarian meme pages, you're probably going to have a pretty grumpy future. You're probably going to be pretty grumpy next cycle because I don't see how things are going to transpire in any realistic fashion that's going to make you not, blind and bitch about it every day on the timeline.
These grumpy people, I think they have two. It's just been like a trope that like the libertarians have been the long term like grumpy people. So like there's this joke that like the Democrats and the Republicans are the same, except the Republicans just want the Democrats to drive the speed limit, which I think is a pretty good joke. And like the libertarians are like the ones that are like trying to pump the brakes even faster than the Republicans. But it's all trending in the same way. And I feel like that's kind of what, like these grumpy people are kind of like. I feel like, the Libertarian Party is kind of like you're a senior in high school that's playing on the JV team in football. You know what I mean? Like you're getting stomped on by like freshmen. Like you're not one of the winners. You're not one of the top players.
Yeah.
In the game, and like I feel like if you're a senior and you're playing JV football, you should probably like go do something that like is better use of your time. You know what I mean? You like the JV teams for like the little kids, but you're about like you're the age at which the government could allow take you and send you across the ocean to go die in a war. You're not like a 14-year-old kid anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that's kind of the future that people have. Like, the people that change the world are not the people that are grumpy. Maybe grumpiness isn't the best word, but
yeah,
you gotta be better at memeing. You can't be on the JV team.
This is the fundamental problem is libertarians need to learn and understand the rules because they're ostensibly trying to play the game their own way. They just don't understand the rules. And you have to learn that you can just do things. And libertarians like to be cranky and they like to complain and they like to play the victim and they like to blame everybody else for not following the rules. But it's the fundamental problem is you can't, they misunderstand what the rules are. So they think that pointing out and pointing out hypocrisy and pointing out things that are, they fail a purity test. They think that that's the rule. Like, if you fail a purity test, then you don't get to succeed. And that's not true. And so they don't understand the rules. So they're just, if you're going to participate in this game, you have to understand the rules. And then you have to be the one who writes those rules if you ever want those rules to be enforced.
That's a good point. And it's kind of like, you know, the Mashadel is like a good example of this. People just going out and doing things. And I think it's cool.
And I just, yeah, it's, and here's the thing. I get what I'm saying might be off-putting to libertarians because libertarians hate rules. But so you have to learn that there has to be rules in a citadel. There has to be rules on a homestead. There has to be rules in society to some extent. And they have to be enforced, dependably and rationally. So, you know, you have to get comfortable with rules. You just don't want the state to be in control of those rules. You want to be the one that enforces those rules.
Well, I think
for yourself.
Yeah, I think there's a few different philosophies, and I think where the libertarians and like a lot of these grumpy Bitcoin maximalists kind of coincide with each other is so like the hardcore statist just believes in ruling through coercion, right? But like the libertarian and most of these Bitcoin maximalists, they've kind of concluded that in many ways coercion is just tyranny, and so they don't like it. But they still want to rule over somebody, but they want to do it in a voluntary way. So what they both try to do is rule through purity tests. And they think that through social pressures, they can accomplish the same goals. But the statists have realized, I think they have a more accurate depiction of reality, which you're not going to stop a murderer with purity tests. You're not going to stop a guy creating a Ponzi scheme with the purity test. You're not going to stop a communist with the purity test. Like these people, they don't care. They're criminals. And I think the third option is you just, you create your little niche that you operate in as an individual on like a micro scale, and then you have like agreed set upon rules, and then you coerce people on a micro level that you've all agreed to the rules. Like if we catch somebody vaping, we're going to cut their dick off or something, you know?
Yeah. It is 100%. It is. Well, I think where you start to turn this around is taking self responsibility, accountability for yourself and your family. Like, it starts at home. It starts within you. You know, Jordan Peterson talked about make your own bed. If you can't even make your own bed, like the rest of your day doesn't matter. Your home citadel, your homestead, like it starts with like your relationship with your wife. And we got into this conversation with Carl, like Satoshi, and he was talking about, you know, he has to listen to 40 hours of podcasts per week, but he has a very demanding job. He's got to be out taking care of his property, living off the grid, living in a social, capital, circular economy. So they hit him, his wife got walkie talkies. So like there, somebody's feeding the animals. Somebody else is cleaning out the barn. Somebody's adjusting the miners to dry some crops and some spices and some cannabis. To stay in touch with these walkie-talkies, and it is a great idea if you have like a very, if you taught your wife walkie-talkie offset, but there's a lot of us out there who, if we gave our wives walkie-talkies, we would just be getting an unfiltered, never-ending stream of wife slop stories and ideas from our wives over walkie-talkie. Every time she had an idea, every time she saw a raccoon, she would be telling you over the walkie-talkie. She wouldn't have tight comms like an orange beret. But there is a training course that is coming up that will, it's a walkie-talkie etiquette, walkie-talkie OPSEC training course for wives. Do you think that, you know, guys who are considering giving their wives walkie-talkies should look into this OPSEC training for their wives? Do you think that they'd be glad they did?
Babe, does Taylor Swift listen to podcasts?
Babe, I'm hot.
Whoa, I just saw a big bird. It's happening all over the world, ladies and gentlemen. Husbands who gave their wives walkie-talkies so they could coordinate proof of work in their citadels are feeling buyer's remorse as they're forced to endure boring, out-of-context, unfiltered wife slop through their walkie-talkies each day. If this sounds like your experience, the 40 Hours Per Week Foundation has a walkie-talkie OPSEC training course for wives that will teach your wife walkie-talkie etiquette so you can get back to work and, most importantly, get back to listening to Bitcoin podcasts. Your wife will learn valuable new tools like mindfulness and the ability to recognize when she's considering sharing wife slop with you while you're listening to Stefan Levera explain concepts like accretive dilution. She will also learn new techniques to help her omit unnecessary details from her stories and get to the point, as well as how to avoid getting sidetracked and communicating more clearly and concisely. Wives will also receive training on communicating logically. Walkie-talkie training for wives is worth the sats. Head over to 40hpw.com today to learn how your wife can gain the comms discipline of Navy SEALs and help your homestead become more thermodynamically sound.
I think it's a good idea, and I think it should be mandatory in your citadel. But yeah, you know, Jordan Peterson, I think, has like been a huge part of creating this army of incels and been a part of this phenomenon essentially that has led to Nick Fuentes you know, becoming popular like the king of the incels. He is telling all these young men to make their beds in the morning, and so they're wasting all this time making their beds when in reality their goal should be to get married so their wives can make their beds for them. They don't need to learn exactly how to make their bed. Like the chances of the wife outliving the man are extremely, extremely high, to the point where it just doesn't, it's like one of those skills that's really never worth learning. And, you know, there was all this emphasis in military schools about making your bed, right? And like, I think a lot of like military dads, you look at like the children of people that were in the military, you know, oftentimes being poorly adjusted. It's because you got these dads that are like running their households like drill sergeants. Like, sure, you should teach your daughter how to make their bed so that they can make their husband's bed for them. But your sons.
Like, thank you. It is, if you, as a man, especially after school and college or whatever, if you as a man are doing your own laundry, you're washing your bed sheets every week, you're making your own bed, you're making your own meals, you become like, you feel like you have no incentive to getting married and having a wife. Your wife, there's a woman out there who is just waiting to find a man who she can do his laundry, fold his clothes, make his bed for him, cook for him, and just do all those chores around the house. Be a good homemaker. Be a good citadel wife. And these guys are just blowing right past them. It's, how much more time would you have to listen to podcasts to be a good father, to help your children listen to podcasts, to listen to podcasts with your children, to smoke cigarettes and listen to Bitcoin podcasts on your homestead with your children? If you outsourced, if you let your wife do those chores for you, and like, that is the traditional family, that is what the citadels will be like. And this is what Bitcoin does. This is how Bitcoin fixes families and fixes communities. And so Jordan Peterson is kind of this, it's a disguise ideology that it seems beneficial to a young man, but all it is doing is depriving him of incentives to get married, depriving him of an incentive to have a wife. And it's destroying our society. It's destroying our culture.
I mean, there would be a much higher likelihood of marriages working out, you know, because they're like, if a man knows, like, it feels nice to have your bed made. You know, to go lay down in your bed at night when it was made. There's a reason why you make your bed so that like bugs don't climb into it and stuff like that. It just keeps the sheets cleaner. Like there's actual purpose to making your bed. But like, you know, a man who knows how to make his own bed, you know, is going to use that potentially as an out to not deal with the frustrations and whatever are in the marriage, you know, whereas if the man realizes, hey, fuck, I don't know how to make my bed. If this marriage doesn't work out, it's going to be catastrophic.
It used to be that if you saw a man who knew how to iron his own clothes, make his own bed, vacuum clean his apartment or his house, you just take care of himself fashionably. It was like, that guy's gay. If this guy's gay, he doesn't need a woman. He doesn't need a wife. He doesn't want a wife. He's gay. And now we see that. We're like, oh, that's just a high-functioning single adult male. No, we need to go back to calling men who make their own beds and iron their own clothes. They're gay because that's what they are. So we can let women know, like, these guys are not on the market. These guys are not looking for wives. These guys are gay. And the rest of us can walk around in our wrinkly Bitcoin podcast t-shirts and attract the women who are looking for husbands.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. Yeah, I think, guys that know how to make their own beds are gay. Jordan Peterson's trying to, I mean, look at Alex Kvesvy. He constantly references how much he loves Jordan Peterson. And he knows how to make his own bed. And look how frustrated he is. Look how frustrated he is at women in general.
Why do you think Jordan Peterson breaks down and cries all the time? He gets so emotional. Because making his own bed for so long has just, it's estrogen in his body has accumulated. It's compounded. Every time you make your bed, estrogen compounds in your, the estrogen is temporary. It goes away. Like, you can have a pump of estrogen and it goes away, but the changes that it makes to your DNA every time that estrogen pumps through your body, like it's like the, when your body injects insulin, eventually you get insulin resistance. Your body's just being pumped full of estrogen every time you make your bed instead of letting your wife do it. And that changes who you are as a person. You become more emotional. You cry. And that's the kind of future that Svetsky is facing if he doesn't figure this out.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just these conservative podcasters are just bad as the leftist podcasters.
It's savage. It's almost savage.
Well, that's kind of the realization everybody's coming to. Because I feel like, you know, when the right wing in America was just getting absolutely decimated for years and years, especially through like the COVID years, people had a much higher tolerance for like bad right wing podcasters. You know what I mean? Like Ben Shapiro was like tolerated. Matt Wallace was tolerated. Like everybody involved with the Daily Wire was tolerated. And now they're coming to the realization that all these guys just suck. And they're like just as bad as like, Mike Brock or Destiny or, you know, whatever the left wing intellectual voice is, that like Tim Pool sucks. Like it's incredible when you are in such, you're in the complete realm of insanity that lesser insanity seems sane. And then as the Overton window shifts, then you see the actual context is like these people were never that interesting or exciting. They were just more palatable because the other people were so, so crazy.
Right. And this is the risk. This is the big risk of society right now, because when it gets to these two extremes, it's always the same. It's left versus right. And the last iteration of that, for the past few centuries or the past four turnings, is communist versus fascism. And when you are getting down to which one is just more palatable versus which one actually aligns with my values, like this, how do I want society to be structured? I've outsourced it to culture instead of taking an active role myself. Is you get fascism versus communism, and the fascists are hot. They're hot. They're hot. They look good. They have good genes, quote unquote. They have big tits. They have beautiful smiles. They're never grumpy. They look like they take care of things. And yeah, the communists is just fat, blue-haired slobs. You know, dudes with hairy chests trying to go into women's bathrooms, fucking Zoran Montani, you know, the progressive Bitcoin podcast. Like, it's just, it's disgusting. Who are people going to side with? They're going to side with the more palatable one, which is the people who are hot.
I think in the modern day, I think this happened historically. I think a big driver of whether your culture should adopt communism or fascism is just depending on certain cultural customs. So you look like communism's like great for Asians, and it's because Asians are short and you can just like pack them into small places, a bunch of them at a time. And there's so many of them. And that's like, that's how communism is. You know what I mean?
They don't need as much food. Yeah.
And, you know, whereas like us Westerners, we like our space a lot more. We're larger, we're taller individuals. And so like fascism fits that way. And then you see the breakdown of fascism versus communism in the United States, where like the communists are all centered around the cities. Like they're all packed on top of each other. So they just like things that way. They don't feel that sense of autonomy that a rancher feels on his 250-acre property in West Texas.
Right.
Or not West Texas. I don't know. There's probably
but you're rancher. Riding the subway full of, you know, people, stinky degenerates, people who don't listen to podcasts. It's a lot, you just have a lot different perspective, a lot different sense of your own identity than if you're a trucker who is driving down the, you know, through the mountains and down country roads in your big, you know, 18 wheeler, your own rig, you got your bit axe, you're listening, you know, smoking cigarettes, listening to podcasts. It's just a much different experience. You're more likely to accept that you can't have air conditioning or that you should use less water so the AI can have more access to water, and you're used to having blackouts because everything is being fed to the state and to the corporations who are laundering money for the state. You're used to it, like you said. But if you got an acre ranch, you got a homestead, you and your wife were using walkie-talkies to coordinate the farm, like you just, you're going to pick fascism for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes down to, so like you look at a lot of these people on the left, they have mental health issues. Most of them are mentally ill. I would argue that communism is a mental illness. I'd argue that fascism is too, but like, I think communism is a little bit more apparent, more disruptive. You know, a lot of them, they don't want kids. They don't really care. They're nihilistic. They don't really care. You're like, anybody that knows anything about communism knows that there's a very high chance for that once your team wins that you're going to get executed and purged as there's power consolidation. And, you know, you see Canada is a communist country, and they, you know, one of the first things that they're doing is they're legalizing assisted suicide, which and they're trying to push it on their populace. So they're just prepping. They're prepping for like that tipping point where they hit the full communism, where they can start doing the purges. And you know, you can argue that, you know, fighting for communists to take control of power is engaging in assisted suicide.
Yeah, exactly. Like New York City's doing that. It's like New York City, the mood of the reason that people want to elect Zoran Montani is it's like this collective understanding that New York needs to be punished, or that New York is not, it's fatalistic. And it is like assisted suicide. And other things the Canadian government is doing is debanking truckers. And so like, this is disproportionately, and they've done this in the past. Justin Trudeau's government did it, where the people who are most likely to be listening to podcasts, to be doing positive things and growing an influence in their communities, they're being punished. They're being cut off by the state. And people who like to go hiking, like you can't go hiking in Nova Scotia or the other province near there, right now, because hikers who listen to podcasts apparently, are dangerous for the climate, and there's wildfires. So they're just, they're attacking. I don't even think they're deliberately attacking Bitcoin podcast listeners. I think it's just they are simply attacking their opposition.
Yeah. Another thing about communists is, like, a lot of these countries that you see that are communist, they've been slaughtered over and over for a very long time. And, like, North Korea, you know, just got raped by Japan, raped by, you know, all these outside cultures, just it's trampled on. Makes sense that they're communist. Chinese, same way. Russia, you know, they lost a lot of wars. And I think like the populace comes to this conclusion. It's like, hey, if we're going to be slaughtered, we want to slaughter ourselves. You know, we want to be the ones controlling our own destiny.
We want to transition our kids. We want to castrate our kids. We want to make sure that our kids transition and can never, we feel we regret reproducing, and we're going to kill it here. It ends with us. And we're going to, yeah, exactly. It's you can boil it down to the joke. You don't let somebody pick a movie when you know they're going to fall asleep 5 minutes into it starting. You know, if they're not going to watch the movie, they don't get to pick it. So it's, we can't go to communism. It is suicide. It is the sacrifice to Moloch.
Well, I think the United States is definitely inevitably going to move towards the direction of fascism more than communism, because America, you know, what won World War II, they were the winners. And like, when you define victory of World War II, everybody gets it wrong. So like, people like to say the Allies won World War II. Like, the Soviets didn't win World War II. They had their population decimated, their economy decimated. You know, the British didn't win World War II. They lost the world reserve currency. The United States gained the reserve world currency from World War II. Europe just got fucked by it, which is why, you know, Germany got fucked, obviously. The Russian soldiers made sure to rape, like, every single German citizen. And that's why they want to become communist. You know what I mean? The United States has the belief that they won the war, and therefore they want to be fascist. And you look at a lot of these other countries, you know, they kind of have the similar beliefs. And like, I think, you know, part of the reason why Putin wanted to invade Ukraine and win that war was so that Russia didn't go communist, and that they had a victory, and they're like, okay, we can be fascist now.
I think that's pretty, and people are looking at, and you know, they're looking at survival right now. They're looking at, it's game theory. They're looking at Israel, and they're looking at, hey, Israel strikes first, fast, caught, quick, ask questions later. And I don't know, you know, people are thinking, I don't know if that's right or wrong. I can't see through the PSYOP online. I do know it is effective. They are winning. They are controlling. So maybe we have to be more like that. And I think that it's a very troubling when a society starts thinking that way. You're going to cause a lot of disagreements internally, and it's going to draw you from the inside if you do not come to an agreement on, did the ends justify the means right now?
Mossad has been running circles around all the other intelligence agencies in the world. And I think Donald Trump's pissed about it to some degree. I think he's feeling jealous. Like, South Park was making fun of him having a little bit of, having a little dick recently, because the CIA under his control has just been super pathetic. And, you know, he's directing all this energy at the cartels. Like, I think he's trying to show up Mossad right now. And it would be pretty fascinating if we saw something more dramatic than the whole pager incident. Like, imagine if Donald Trump blew up every single hardware wallet that the Mexican drug cartel had simultaneously.
It'd be a lot of Bitcoin value would be lost in an occasion like that. It would be very disruptive.
I mean, think about the tactical strategy of that. Of you know, the cartel owns a lot of Bitcoin, and
Well, chain analysis could just say, hey, this is who, this is them, Palantir, this is who that owns this address, and then they just figure out based on some sort of, other information they got from their IP. Oh, these are the hardware wallets. This is where they're located. The pings are coming from these towers. Just carpet bomb this, or, set all these treasures, these cold cards, whatever, to explode.
It'd be interesting to see if the cartel has their seed phrases backed up properly. But theoretically, maybe this is why Trump has been waiting to go full steam on the strategic Bitcoin reserve. He's wanting to, blow up all of his enemies' hardware wallets first to make Bitcoin more valuable.
That'd be a wise decision. It'd be the game theoretic outcome that I think some of the top crypto minds in the White House would come to. Naturally.
Yeah, Saylor's been going on about this thing where, one of the most selfless things that you could do is die with your own keys. But I don't know why he doesn't extrapolate that to the most selfless thing that you could do is blow up the enemies of the United States government's keys to make your Bitcoin more valuable, make it less liquid.
That's why we have to put, Iran's most secure facility in Fordow, where they had the uranium, it was easily penetrated by U.S. bunker busters. We have to protect our Bitstamp or our stamp seed titanium backup cold car or cold storage or seed phrases. We have to bury these deep under the mountains in places that cannot be destroyed by our enemies. I mean, it's wherever the nukes are pointing, we have to make those secure locations. We need a lot of Faraday protection.
It's all interesting stuff to game theory, for sure. I feel like software is going to turn into hardware pretty quickly.
Some would say it already started.
Yeah. I don't think there was any coverage of whether the Mossad blew up the keys, Hezbollah's keys, but in Lebanon. But I think there's probably a pretty good chance they hit that too. Alrighty. Last episode, I forgot what I did. So the last episode, I think I rambled for like 40 minutes solo.
It was good. It was good. Made me excited to come back.
Man. Being out of rhythm with this weekly cadence is throwing me off for sure. I'm already forgot what we talked about or what I talked about, but okay. So I think I talked about like how people should get excited and enjoy the bull market. That's exactly what we did at Lake Satoshi. That's what I'm continuing to do. But
very bullish.
Yeah. So our first boost was Skate 8 10,000 Sats says, finding out about and then listening to this on the drive home from Lake Satoshi was definitely a highlight of the weekend. Comedic Gold and such a great signal and perspective spoke to add the Bugle and Rock Paper Bitcoin to the Must Listen to podcast queue. Now I understand the math about listening 40 hours per week.
People are learning. It's word is getting out.
Yeah, tell your friends about the Bugle. Well, I don't know what I was talking about, Comedic Gold. This is a hard-hitting news show, folks.
Maybe they're just commenting on the hilarity of the clown world we're reporting on.
Want to say, so I think there's some people I want to add to people's list of 40, or at least share my 40 hours per week. So, my good friend Rayo from Liberty Under Attack, he's been putting on some cool shows. He just had Shadrack on yesterday, and I was listening to that. They were talking about mesh networks, and mesh networks are interesting, but I'm a fan of those guys. And then I don't think I've talked about this guy for a while, but I was listening to him a bunch, was David Bennett in the Bitcoin And podcast. I think he's got one of the best news shows in Bitcoin. If you just want to like get a few updates a week of what's going on, he kills it. He's got a great show.
Nice.
Have you listened to David Bennett?
I haven't. I'll have to check that out. Sounds great. I don't know what order the videos are in on here. I'm looking at my phone. So the next one that I'm seeing is 10,000 Sats from Fundamentals. Fundamentals says, best solo greaser rip since the hour-long pre-rip leading into the Mike Brock defrocking. So yeah, it was Fundamentals was a big fan of this one.
It looks like all the boosts are messed up. Let me pull them up somewhere else because I don't even see Fundamentals boost.
The next 10,000 boost is from Late Stage Hoddle. We already talked about Late Stage hanging out with him at Lake Satoshi. It says, what the actual fuck? How did I miss episode 69? What a shame. Listening now. See you at Lake Satoshi.
Yeah. We didn't do really anything special with 69. But it was a special episode for it being 69. You know, I was at a rock show last night, and there was a guy running around on stage with, he looked like Connell Tarantula. He had like bald head and beard. He wasn't wearing the turban, or it's not the proper term for it, but you know what I mean? The head wrap. But yeah, that was an interesting outfit. I feel like it's a power play, power move. You know, when you're singing metal rock songs and you got a 69 shirt on.
Hell yeah. People know you like to fop.
Yeah, I really enjoyed meeting Late Stage Hoddle. That was good. I like to meet our podcast listeners. I like to meet our consistent boosters. It's always a good time.
Hell yeah.
Next boost from Mana 10,000 Sats says, nice remaster. So I've remastered the Marty Says This Time Is Different.
Yeah, that was Adam Simica. He's a big fan. Check out his Mana wallet. It's pretty nifty. Good user experience.
Yeah, I like to use it to there's a few ways to use the Lightning Network. One of the ways is you can actually learn how it works and do everything correctly. Another way is that you can use all these different wallets to arbitrage things and be lazy. And both can get you to the ultimate goal. And I found it useful as an arbitrage tool for managing channel liquidity. Because it's a lot of work. Anytime I have a question about something Bitcoin related, to get my wife to learn how to do it and then explain it to me, like that's a lot of work. And you know, there's more important things than managing your node liquidity, your channel liquidity.
Yeah. You know, thank you for the support, Nana Wallet. Next, Avi Burra from Club Chain Radio. Appreciate the shout out. Have fun at Lake Satoshi. It'd have been nice if Avi made it to Lake Satoshi. He'd been cool. He would have had a good time.
Yeah, that would have been great to have Avi and QW there. There was definitely a big Noster, a lot of people talking about Noster. I think, hell yeah. Augie gave us a boost. He did it. Was that the first time we received an in-person boost?
I think so. This is the first one I remember.
He gave us big blocks of cheese. That was pretty cool.
Yes, exactly. The raw milk cheese. It's fucking awesome.
But yeah, anyways, there were some people that were really excited about Noster at Lake Satoshi, and Augie was really excited to get Angela McCardle on Noster.
Hell yeah.
Jason C, 1,221 Sat says, I thought I was the only one whose favorite part of Atlas Shrugged was the cigarettes. Well, I thought I was the only one too, so you're not alone there, Jason. We're in the same team on that front. You know, Fundamentals had some, speaking of Jason, Fundamentals had some interesting theories on fish recently.
Yeah. Yes, you can hear about those theories back on the Chained podcast. It's the fish logo in orange If you like jam bands, that is the Bitcoin podcast you need to check out.
It seems like all roads lead to fish.
It does. To those guys who really like fish, it does seem like all roads lead to fish and fish songs. They can relate anything to it. It's pretty cool. It's very interesting. Even if it's like astrology, even if you don't believe it, it's still interesting. There's patterns there that are undeniable. So it's definitely worth checking out. The next boost, 521 sats from Doom Satoshi. You have a terrific intro each episode. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
I think it's important to have good intros to podcasts. Sam Hyde had a really good intro to his podcast. Governable Misfits has good intros. I really like the intros to PlebChain. They're usually really good. They do that sermon before their show, and I like that. I think Dave Bennett could. Oh, I listened to Guy Swan for the first time in a while recently. That was on my 40 HPW. He had all these in-person podcast experiences at Lake Satoshi, but then traveling to and from, get back on it on the 40 HPW game. Mr. Rabbit says, for 521 sats, says, Bitcoin is the anti-grumpy pill. Well, a lot of people haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah. Some people seem to believe that Bitcoin can fix everything, but it seems still hasn't fixed their attitude. So
these guys that came in 2017, they look at themselves as if they're like elder statesmen. That's what it is. They think they are the elder statesmen. Like they were like the ones that were like shilling Bitcoin before the president was pumping it. Before the mainstream got in, they think if you got in 2017, you haven't really been. You're not an elder statesman. You're not even an adolescent yet. Like, chill out, get off your high horse, and do something.
Yeah, these elder quote unquote, they're jealous. They're grumpy about people kind of caring more about the opinions of the macro elders instead of them. They think the macro elders are Johnny come latelys, or they just have paper Bitcoin. They don't understand Bitcoin. So they're just a little salty. I think the macro elders make them grumpy.
But that's how it's been in all the previous cycles. I really like the macro elders more than the memers. It's just like, I don't know. I mean, all these guys are like, I wish missed the bear market back when the memes, dude, the memes fucking sucked this last bear market. Anybody that says that is fucking retarded.
None of the memers, none of the meme gangs have gotten a better meme than Nothing Stops This Train by Lynn Alden, macro gang. So that's the bar you have to beat. Nothing Stops This Train. If you can't beat it, stop being grumpy.
Fuck. Is Lena Alden the best memer of this past cycle?
Hard to argue against it. The hottest memer for sure.
She's so hot.
But yeah, more people need to figure out Bitcoin is, and Bitcoin podcasts are the anti-grumpy pill. So thank you, Mr. Rabbit. Next we got Turkey just hit us with 500 sats. No message. Thank you, Turkey.
Dave, for 100 sats, sounds like he wants to fight me. He said, episode 70 was grumpy. Save us, Ron Palmer. It was not grumpy. I mean, I'm grumpy now. It's going to be the rest of the boost section is going to be grumpy because he called me grumpy. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You call the podcaster that you're listening to grumpy, they're going to eventually become grumpy.
Look what happened to Odell, you know. It's how it works.
It seemed like we had a reverse psychology effect on Dell. We started calling him grumpy, and then he became less grumpy.
Well, it affects every podcaster differently, apparently. So I think that be careful with who, if you're going to throw out accusations of grumpiness, just think about, you know, you just, it's like throwing out racism, throwing out you're a fascist, you're a communist, you're this or that. It's like to call somebody grumpy is, you know, it's going to lose its impact if you're not more. It's like Shinobi. Shinobi calls everybody a retard and it just doesn't hit as hard when he calls everybody, if you call everybody grumpy, you're just going to debase it. And I think most of us are here because we're against debasement. So just think about that, Dave. But, you know, if somebody thinks you're grumpy, it's you know, we do want to take that seriously. At least I do. That's the, I think that's why you asked me to save him. Speaking of somebody who I can't tell if they're grumpy or if they're really excited, at any given boost that they send us, it's our friend Pies. He hit us with 2 100 zap boosts. He said, "Let's fucking go, motherfuckers. Salute, mushroom flex emojis, 40 hours per week." And then he hit us with a "fucking right, I'm Pies, motherfucker." So I think maybe that's a secret, right? Like, it's Pies. He is communicating, high intensity, high energy feedback to us. We can't always tell if it's grumpy or joyful, but we know that it's signal because it's coming from Pies, and we use that, and it really feeds us. And people like Pies, Dave, you are a great booster, late stage title, all Jason, Mr. Rabbit, Turkey, Fundamentals, all you guys. Sorry if I missed somebody. Big BGC on boards, not in the boost this week, which is kind of surprising. It's been a while since we didn't get a boost from BGC on board. But Blizza, same. We miss you, Blizza, if you're still out there. We just like the high signal feedback. So that's why we appreciate guys like you and Pies.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up this episode, Rod, what do you think is the first restaurant in America who has the highest chance of letting people smoke inside? I got an opinion on this.
I would go with Long John Silver's. I don't know who eats at Long John Silver's. I think they're really hurting for, I think there's two things that could turn Long John Silver's around. It would be accepting Bitcoin and letting people smoke inside at the restaurants. I think a Bitcoin treasury company like that, Long John Silver's, that could honestly be a really successful venture.
I don't think I've ever eaten at Long John Silver's. There's like this whole class of restaurant like Long John Silver's and Red Lobster that are really going to have to reinvent themselves because their entire customer base is stupid boomers. And then, you know, they like con veterans to come in on Veterans Day with free food, think it's going to convert. And then they show up and they're like, fuck, this is a stupid boomer restaurant. I'm not eating here. I'm going to go eat somewhere more respectable, like Chipotle or First Watch. You know, First Watch is like the new hot thing, you know, that everybody likes.
Yeah. I love going to Five Guys and getting a $17 burger. And I love to go to First Watch and get an $18 omelet. It's just, you pay for the quality.
Well, it's the aesthetic, you know, of like the, you feel like whatever you're doing is like healthy. It's hip.
Yeah.
It's in many ways, you know, these types of restaurants, they're an act of rebellion, a subtle rebellion against the boomer generation of just like toxic sludge. Like, you think of Cracker Barrel.
Boomer slop. Yeah. Boomer slop. It is. Boomer slop is Cracker Barrel. Boomer slop is Texas Roadhouse. Boomer slop is Applebee's. You know, it's all these restaurants. We're rebelling against that. And it's, you know, I could see a restaurant chain like First Watch, like putting creatine in your coffee, adding that to the menu, things like that. It's just, you know, seed oils in your hash browns, just tallow hash browns. You know, you're right. It is a distinction. It's a fashion statement to be healthy or to care about the aesthetics of health, the act of fascism. We are rebelling against the boomers by leaning into this fascist light, and it's getting into, you know, our restaurants, our brunches. It's everything. It's, we can go on and on forever, but are you saying that smoking in first watch is what you think would be like the big flex?
No, not at all. That'd be cool, though. I'd be a huge fan of first watch. Let people no, I think Waffle House is going to be the first restaurant in America.
Yeah, yeah. I think First Watch would be, it would be very brave to embrace health in such a radical fashion to allow smoking at brunch. But I think the best product market fit is cigarettes and smoking at Waffle House. 400%. I think I have to go with you. Long John Silver's and Waffle House, it would crush.
I would have said Denny's, but you know, Denny's discontinued the 24-hour chain.
It's not safe for punk.
Waffle House is really one of the standalones, one of the only restaurants in America that's a widespread chain that's 24. You know, in cigarette smokers need those restaurants that are 24. You think of like, you know, anybody that's had a really difficult day at work, you know, like the business owner that stayed up all night just working their ass off. It's 3 a.m. They just got done doing what they were working for 18, 19 hours that day, 20 hours. And they just want to go to a restaurant. Maybe they're not done working. They need to drink coffee at 3 a.m. so they can go back and work. And they want to sit in a fucking restaurant in the middle of the night and eat breakfast food and smoke cigarettes. And Denny's took at least the drink coffee and, you know, eat breakfast food late at night away from them. Another thing that's really lame is I think these breakfast restaurants, like, imagine how much of a fucking loser you are if you go to Denny's and you order off the lunch meal. Like,
right,
you're at a breakfast restaurant.
Yeah. I'm not going to Denny's for beef stroganoff. I'm not going to Denny's for, you know, a beef Wellington. Just give me an omelet, any of moons over my hammy,
chicken
and a black coffee. But when he smoke a cigarette, this is what I was going to say earlier. It's like Otis admired his coffee. He offered you the cream and sugar. Your coffee's so good, Otis. Had the confidence to offer somebody a cup of coffee and a cigarette. No cream or sugar. Because that is the best experience.
Hey, you should be making fun of people for ruining the coffee with cream and sugar. But yeah, bullish on Waffle House, folks. You got anything before we wrap this one up, Rod?
No, I think get your tickets to Lake Satoshi next year. You don't want to miss it. It was a great experience. Great to see everybody.
Folks, this is the Bugle Weekly, the most thermodynamically sound podcast in the universe, in all of the dimensions, beyond just the world. Tell your friends. Don't tell your enemies. They won't understand it anyways, and they'll probably get offended. But tell all your friends that are orange-pilled podcast listeners out there. Thank you to everybody who boosted this week. So good to be back in the saddle podcasting again. We'll catch you on the next one.
Feel the relief as we sit here, smoking cigarettes. Stop and take a breath. All I wanted you to see. I We draw together closer, looking for the escape, searching for shelter from the storm's rage.